Welcome along then to the Drew Buzney Show on this beautiful April Tuesday, a absolutely stunning day in Schenectady, New York. On the show today, we wrap up our Masters talk after Scottie Scheffler was crowned champion. We look ahead to the first Celtics playoff game this Sunday afternoon, and we talk about the Red Sox defensive struggles. All that next on the Drew Buzney Show. Welcome back to the Drew Buzney Show. You are listening to it on WRUC 89.7, live from Schenectady, New York, and beautiful Union College. If not, you're listening to it later today on all the major podcast platforms. Just 2 days ago, Scottie Scheffler won his second green jacket in just 3 years. And I sat here in this booth on this show 2 weeks ago, and I tried to convince the whole world, or whoever listens to my show, that Scottie Scheffler was not the dominant player in golf right now, or the fact that he did not equate to the dominance that Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy had. But I'm not saying he proved me wrong, but he did make up for the argument. I will say he is very dominant. I wouldn't say he is more dominant than Tiger Woods was comparative to the pack and the field around him. I think Tiger Woods is miles ahead, where Scottie is only yards ahead, if that makes sense. I still think Scottie is the best player in golf. But if you look at the gap between Scottie and the rest of the PGA players, and then Tiger and the rest of the PGA players, the gap between Tiger was bigger than Scottie has it now. And I mean, you can't argue really now that the LIV Golf guys really even matter, because the one tournament, or the first tournament of the year, sorry, that you can really compare the PGA guys to the LIV guys, you have the LIV guys, other than Bryson, shooting 82 over par, which we'll get to in a little bit on the show, but it seemed just like another PGA Tour event. I mean, you had Brooks, you had Bryson, you had John Rahm, and I mean, other than the first day, you didn't really notice them. They weren't really a factor in the golf tournament. It was Oberg, the rookie on the PGA Tour and the Masters and his majors. And then it was Scottie, the new Tiger Woods, if you want to call him, or, you know, comparative based on the year he's had so far with 3 wins out of his last 4 starts. And he played solid golf. I wouldn't say he blew everyone out of the water. He kind of just did what almost Tiger used to do, is he would hold back and he would play the smart golf, and everyone around him would make mistakes. And it was really evident on the 11th hole on Sunday. The group ahead of him was Oberg, who was at that time also 7 under and near the lead. And on the 11th hole at Augusta, you have to miss right. If you miss left, you're gone in the water. Good luck for making a bogey. And that's what Oberg did. He missed left and in the water, made double bogey. And now he's 5 under with Scottie at 7 under, hasn't even played the 11th hole. And then in the final group, Morikawa, who I believe was either tied at the lead at that point or 1 back at 6 under, did the exact same thing. So at that point, Scottie didn't have to be aggressive for the rest of the round. After that, he had at least, I believe, a 2-shot lead, 2 par 5s to play. Oberg and Morikawa did not make use of the 2 remaining par 5s, and he kind of just coasted to victory. And it wasn't like he had to make a clutch birdie on the 18th or the 17th and had to make this really long putt to stay in it. It's Scottie kind of just did his thing and let the people around him, the more inexperienced people at Augusta, make mistakes. And I'm speaking about Augusta National, and these past 2 days have kind of sucked, because Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday were amazing. I mean, you look at the most prestigious course on the whole world, a rare course that not many people get to play, not many people even know about. And there's secrets on the course that the general public doesn't know about. The bathrooms, the hidden putting greens, the 2 ranges, one for the Masters, one for the public. And it's crazy that the same course every year plays host to this great tournament, and it's still a test. I mean, you look at it, you look at Friday with the wins and everything, and I'm not saying the Masters is usually a time where people shoot 4 under, 5 under, 6 under, 7 under, but I mean, they were doing that going into Sunday, and that's more, you know, U.S. Open things where you notice scores or you want scores closer to even par. And you saw that at the Country Club in Brookline just a couple years ago where, you know, the winning score, I believe, was 5 or 6 under, and it was a battle. It was definitely a four-day tough battle to get the trophy. But yeah, going back to what I just said, no one could really go head-to-head with Scotty. He's the smart player. He's the person that, you know, can get through the round without losing his head. And if he makes a mistake, I believe he went double bogey one day. I believe it was Saturday or it was Friday. And boom, all of a sudden, again, he's tied for the lead. And it's just that rebound. He's like an elastic band. One thing goes wrong and boom, he's back into his normal, you know, good playing self. And it's really cool to watch. And it's really cool to see that. Of course, we have to talk about Tiger Woods. And I mentioned last week on the Masters special on the Drew Busney Show that he's overhyped. That all this talk about Tiger Woods coming back for, you know, playing this one tournament since February, who cares? I mean, yes, he's the greatest player of all time. He's the greatest golfer. He has gave people great moments. But those great moments are in the 90s, early 2000s. He's had one great moment in the last two decades, and that's winning the Masters in 2019. You know, doing the same thing Nicholas and Mickelson did is, you know, you're out of it and you win one more major, one more big tournament when you're older, and boom, then you ride off to the off into the distance as this great player. And it was really cool to see that he made 24 cuts in a row. Yes, he made history, but if you look at the TV coverage, ESPN, who did the first 2 days, it was Tiger walking, it was Tiger reading his putt, it was Tiger talking to people, Tiger on the range, and, you know, I don't really care. I'll see him hit his putt, I'll see him hit a shot, but I don't really care to watch him walk up to his ball the whole time. I'd rather in those 100 yards where he walks up to the green, see three other shots. I don't care if the shot's not live for Tiger Woods, I'll see a tape delay, like, I don't really care. And so, I thought too much focus is always on Tiger Woods. Yes, he's good, and yes, he's playing, but let's focus on the people that's going to win. Let's focus on the people in contention. And yes, it's Thursday and Friday. We don't know what's going to happen, so we want to get everyone. But we didn't get everyone. ESPN did an absolute terrible job. We had like three players the whole time. And after that it was Tiger Woods, who was around even par and not even close to being in contention. Like, no offense to the people that love Tiger Woods, but his glory days are well behind him. He's past his prime. He's on the downfall of his career. I mean, yes, he made the cut, and all of a sudden, now he finished dead last. He's trying an 82. So he's not good anymore. You know, he doesn't have a back to support himself. He can't move his ankle. Yes, he still is a good golfer, and, you know, you would love to watch him, but he's never going to be on the top page of the leaderboard again. It's just the cold, hard truth, and people don't really want to believe that. They still want to believe, you know, Tiger's going to win. And you look on the Golf Channel, you look at CBS, you look at ESPN, oh, Tiger has a chance. You know, everyone comes into the interview. You saw it with Will Zalatoris and Fred Couples. Oh, yeah, Tiger's not just here to make the cut. He's here to win. Really? Stop lying to us. He was here to make the cut. There was no way in the whole world that Tiger Woods was going to win the Masters. He is not going to win another tournament for the rest of your life. And if he does, I'll give everyone in the world $1 million. Just kidding, I will not, but he will never win. His glory days are behind him. He's past his prime. You know, he should just turn into a coach for his son, who made a 9 trying to qualify for the PGA Tour and didn't get close. So maybe focus on your kid. Maybe your kid will be as good as you. But, I mean, time to get off the hype train. Time to get off the bandwagon with Tiger Woods. One other thing I want to note for the PGA players is Wyndham Clark, who after his first round made a backhanded comment saying, you know, live golf guys, you know, still have 54 more holes to go, you know, live golf guys, only play 54 holes, so, you know, a lot more time to make up after shooting, I think, an even par first round, so ways to go, and he ended up missing the cut and only playing 36 holes, so I just thought that was instant karma for Wyndham Clark, and it's just this constant belief that don't badmouth other people. I mean, if you don't believe in live golf, so be it. Keep that to yourself. You don't need to sit here and, you know, say they suck. You know, you might not support the league and you might not support the players that go, but Everyone has their reasons for doing something. If you leave a job, you have a reason for doing it. And yes, many people want it for the money, but they admit that. And you can hate them for it, but in the media and the world, you don't have to be a jerk. You should always choose, and I've learned this from my family and my family members, that you should always choose to be the better person, to be the nice person. Take the high road. And, you know, if you have a choice between being nice and not being nice, you choose being nice. Even if you don't want to do it, you know, you swallow your pride and you say the right thing. And for Wyndham Clark, I think, you know, yes, you won the U.S. Open. Yes, you won two signature events. And you have a great story with your anger issues. But you really have no place to criticize other people. Because everyone makes their own decisions for themselves, whether you like it or not. You know, I'm not a fan that Jon Rahm jumped over to Liv. And, you know, I may not really want to watch him anymore, but he did what he had to do for his family and for himself. And I'm not going to go out to the world and start bad-mouthing him and, you know, being mean to him, because that's just not what this world is about. This world is about accepting people for what they do, even if you don't like it, and being nice, putting a smile on your face, giving them a hug. And Jon Rahm did mention that there were people at the Masters that just blatantly ignored him for going to Liv. And you can hate him all you want, but just don't be a jerk. That's the essence of my message. You know, yes, you're playing golf and you're playing a sport, but people watch the sport and listen to the reactions, and it translates into real life. So you look at all these football players and basketball players who get in trouble off the court, break the law. I mean, you're setting an example for the general public who worship these players. So for Wyndham Clark, just keep it to yourself. I said I'll get to this again, but the Liv Golf players is, there's this narrative that it's Liv versus PGA, and that when we get to the majors, it's what tour is going to win. You know, if Liv gets 5 out of the top 10, oh, Liv's a better tour because they won the Masters, and it really shouldn't be. I mean, you look at Rory McIlroy. He plays on both the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour. So do many other people that play on the PGA Tour. They have dual membership. And, you know, if Tommy Fleetwood got second place and Rory McIlroy got third place, we wouldn't say, oh, the DP World Tour won. You know, they're the dominant tour in the world. No, it's, you know, the PGA Tour golfers. It's just the golfers in general that did well. And so I think this narrative that it's Liv versus PGA and all the majors needs to go away. Because if you want to go off that, the PGA Tour won that Masters. I mean, other than Bryson, and everyone always wanted to talk about Bryson because he was winning. But, you know, most of them were in the bottom half of the top 10. You know, the people that made the cut combined for 82 over. A lot of them didn't make the cut. And then all of a sudden, Bryson's winning after the first day in top 5, and boom. Bryson's the only Liv golfer that matters. We don't want to carry out Brooks, who's not a contention, Phil, that's not a contention, Sergio Garcia, Dustin Johnson, that didn't make the cut as past Master champions. It's just this whole narrative is skewed, and it's taking away. And yes, maybe it's interesting for people to talk about Liv versus PGA, but we get this one opportunity. We get 4 weeks a year for the best in the world from both tours to compete. And we should just worship that we have the best to watch again. And you have a chance to see the true best golfers. It's not watching two tours during a weekend. And it also brings up the idea that maybe the Liv Golf format is not the right one. With 54 holes, fewer tournaments, you know, more of a party atmosphere. Maybe it is not the best prep. Maybe it's the idea that, you know, freshness with the less rounds and less tournaments, maybe it's not as valuable as playing more golf tournaments to be able to tune yourself up. So, you know, you can have this whole debate, but at the end of the day, it's not Liv versus PGA. It's you play what you want to do, and you have this chance at the majors to play against the best of the world, and whoever wins, wins. Scotty won. You know, I'm not sitting here saying the PGA Tour is a better tour because Scotty won. They could both be good tours. You know, to their players, they're the best tour. And so you can support both. It's not one or the other, really. And, you know, that's the narrative that, you know, you want when you watch the Golf Channel, people like Brandon Chambly and Rich Lerner, they say the PGA Tour is the tour, and that's the one you have to support. And you may not believe with the foundations and the backings of the Liv Tour, but in the end, it's just another tour. It's like the DP World Tour, and you know, you may not like how it came about and why people left, but it's not a battle. They're all just the same players we used to love and we used to watch when they were on the PGA Tour. So, as we get to the 15-minute mark, about mostly halfway through our show, we're going to take a quick 30-second break. We'll be back on the Drew Buzney Show to talk about the Celtics and Red Sox next. Welcome back to the Drew Buzney Show on WRUC 89.7. We have two things to talk about for the remainder of our show. And the first one is being the Celtics. They start the final stretch towards Banner 18 this Sunday at the Garden at 1 p.m. They will play most likely the Miami Heat. And if you do not know how it works, on Wednesday, the 76ers and Heat play in Philadelphia. The winner will play the Knicks as the number 7 seed. The loser will play the winner of the Hawks and Bulls game. Also on Wednesday and Friday, the loser and winner play. The winner of that game on Friday will play the Boston Celtics on Sunday. And today was the first practice getting ready for the playoffs. And I was reading about it. And Joe Mazzulla, funny story, told the media to get there at 10:05 to answer questions. And the media got there at 10:05, but no one was there. The practice actually went till 12:20. It went 2 hours and 15 minutes later than Joe Mazzulla thought. And there were scenes. Jaylen Brown was practicing real live free throws with people around him switching sides because he sucks at free throws. And, you know, you win games when you have free throws. There was the defense chant, if you ever heard in the Garden, defense, bam, bam, defense, bam, bam. Apparently he was playing at double the max volume at the practice arena. And Al Horford said the practice was harder than training camp ever was. So, you look at it, most likely have to play the Heat. And the Heat are Celtics killers. Yes, we got past them 2 years ago, but the other 2 years we played them in the Eastern Conference Finals. Even as the favorites, the Heat still won. They were the underdogs, and they beat the Celtics. And especially in the first round, you can't go to seven games. Because the minute you go to seven games, especially in the first two rounds, you're on the back foot. You have less rest. You know, you're playing better teams as you go forward, hot teams. And you just need to be well-rested. So you need to get through the Heat in five games or less, four or five games. And so I like what Joe's doing is, you know, that most of the starters now are not going to play in 2 weeks leading up to the playoffs. So you want to keep them in game-ready shape, and you want to keep them going with the high intensity because once playoffs starts, you know, teams actually start playing defense. Offense becomes harder. You know, the crowds are rowdier, especially in Boston and in Miami, honestly. And so everything's just amplified to, you know, to three times what it was in the regular season. So, you know, that means you have to go three times the greater practice intensity than it was in the regular season. And, you know, I'm all for Joe Mazzulla doing that. I think he's been learning constantly about his past. And, you know, he's not the greatest coach. There are faults with his timeouts and the plays he draws out at the end of the game. But this is one where I'm supportive of. I want these practices to be hard so the time they get, you know, to game one, they're not surprised by the physicality. Because the Heat are already going to have two physical games under themselves. So, you know, that's their in-game practice. Because I think there's a 99% chance the Heat are playing the Celtics. So, you know, we got to simulate the playoff games before we get to the real one. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm guessing the first game Sunday. And then maybe the next game not till Wednesday or Thursday, just the way the first round goes. But I like the Celtics in five games over the Heat. And then most likely, I think we're going to play the Cavaliers, beat them in five or six, and then we're going to play either the Bucks or the Knicks, beat them in five and six, and most likely end up against the Nuggets in the finals and beat them in six games. So that is my prediction for the Celtics winning Banner 18. And let's get into our last segment of the day, the Red Sox defensive struggles. Starting the season 7-3 out on the West Coast, now just hovering around 500 playing the Cleveland Guardians tonight. They lost 6-0 on Boston Day, on the Boston Marathon Day against the Guardians as well, playing their annual 11 o'clock game. And that game was just a whole microcosm of this season so far. You see Rafael Devers, the third baseman, basically running out to play left field. He's running out to catch a fly ball in the dead center of where left field plays. Runs at Tyler O'Neill, they're both hurt. and they lead the league in errors. They've probably done that for 3 years, and it's just, it's mind-boggling. Because I was thinking about this, and I told my grandfather this earlier in the day, that, you know, these baseball players, since probably the age of three, they've dedicated their whole life to the fundamentals of sports. You know, make the right plays, play your position, don't overrun other players, you know, tag up, get your butt down on the grounders. You know, don't touch it if it's going to roll foul. All the little things, the fundamentals, the essence of baseball, you know, you learn at a young age, and then you play town little league, you play travel ball, you devote your whole life to it. Your parents devote all their money, all their free time to baseball. You go to college for it, you get recruited, you go through all the minor leagues. And all of a sudden you get to the MLB and you give up on the fundamentals your career was based off of. I mean, I get why people can't hit. It's hard to hit a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. That goes right by you in less than the flick of your fingers. But, you know, defense has not changed since you were three. It's still ground balls, pop-ups. It's not all of a sudden, you know, from age three to four, you know, you're facing this knuckleball, this curveball, this slider. I mean, for your whole life, you've been facing fastballs. And yes, they're faster, but they're still fastballs. I mean, the ground balls don't change. It's still the same fundamentals, you know, the same footwork, the same butt down, the same throwing it to first base. So it's just totally mind-boggling that the Red Sox can't play defense. And what is the coaching staff doing? Is it not fixable? I mean, you're teaching them how to play baseball. If you cannot teach players how to play defense, which is half the game of baseball, why are you a coach? So what? You can teach them to hit. If you can hit and you can't play defense, you're never going to win a game. And that's for maybe 3 years in a row the Red Sox have done that. And it's totally unacceptable. Because, no offense, it's probably the easiest part of the game. I could probably go out there at Fenway Park right now and field a ground ball. You know, and I barely played baseball in 5 years. But, yet again, it's a fundamental of the sport. And so you learn it when you started playing, and it really should never go away. So, I don't know what Alex Gore is doing. Maybe he needs to be fired. I don't know. Maybe he can't coach defense. Maybe we need a defensive-minded coach and then hire a really good hitting coach. Maybe that's the fix, but, you know, totally mind-boggling, totally unacceptable for a major league team. But thank you very much for listening today. Next week, we'll react to, I believe, just game one of the Celtics playoffs. Also, game one of the Bruins playoffs. That's Saturday at TD Garden. We'll talk Red Sox and... just to look ahead, next month is the second major of the year, the PGA Championship. So we will have another special golf episode the week of that. Stick around for that. Stick around for the rest of the spring. We have about 7 shows to go on the Drew Busney Show. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next week.